Hello and welcome to the Counterpress Podcast. I am your host, Kirk Kinsey, and with me is Josh Cacho. Josh, how you doing?
I mean, I was probably 5 minutes from looking for the comfort of some spam musubi to make me feel better after another L when Bwanko came through and scored a banger to win it, right? Like, while last week felt like a draw that was a loss that felt like a draw that felt like a loss, this one was definitely more on the other side of things, right? Where you are happy to get out of there with happy to get a point from that one. Obviously, you always want three no matter what. But you know, this at this point of the season, right, you take what you can get, and you're really just trying to make sure, given the circumstances and what we know is coming in July, you know, our goal is to make sure that we're our heads above water and we're in a good position to make a run when it really matters.
Yeah. Yeah. I think sadly, I think we do just need to adjust our expectations, right? Where all of us think very highly of LAFC within MLS. We are accustomed to winning the majority of games, right? We are accustomed to seeing a product that's very fun to watch. Yeah. And that's just not the case right now. And I think that's just something new for everybody. And I think to be an LAFC fan this season is just going to be an exercise in patience until the July transfer window, when a couple Frenchmen are probably going to show up and hopefully add some dynamism to the attack. And hopefully that does it, right? Hopefully this model of adding a lot of firepower in July continues to pay dividends for LAFC and everybody gets out of the rut and we all forget about kind of the doldrums at the beginning of the season, right? I guess that brings up a larger question for me is like, okay, well, if this is the case, and it's going to be like this year in and year out, unless we're, you know, like playing CCL or something like that, where you have to have people, you have to have signings come in the winter to kind of help you get through those competitions. Like, you know, why invest much into the beginning of the season? It seems like a calculated decision on the part of LAFC to not invest a whole lot into the beginning of the season and just to kind of survive, right? It's this, we've talked about it for years. It's the Seattle model, or what used to be the Seattle model when they were good under Garth Lagerwey, right? Where they'd just be abysmal and then fix themselves in the summer and stand out in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I think as a if you're a fan of any sport in the America, in the United States, right, it's par for the course, right? Yeah, I think you're, you know, and again, and we're, with the exception of maybe the NFL, right? And I don't know if that's actually, the feeling of high stakes is actually something there, or if it's just because of fantasy football and some of the betting things that have kind of come along with what we deal with there. But the NFL definitely has a way, even though obviously still playoffs, you know, but your division stand, you know, maybe because you break it down to a division, there's those different things. So the playoff spots are a little bit harder, are definitely harder to come by.
Yes.
In the NFL. Yes. So I think that's different versus, you know, the NBA.
Fewer games in the NFL as well. Far fewer games.
So when there's only 17 games, right, compared to 82 in basketball, 152 in baseball, you know, all these different things, it's going to feel different, right?
Yeah.
And so obviously with soccer, right, we're at 35 games now?
I think it's 36
is the yearly in the
regular season.
Season total, right? So,
I think so.
But the thing is, without a true table, right, and with the amount of teams that end up making the playoffs, it truly doesn't matter, right, in the long run. So,
yeah,
that's why, I don't know, it's hard to really put it, you know, I think you're right, right? It's one of these things where it's like, you know, you invest as much as you can into this one. You're really just hoping as an LAFC fan that the team can keep their head above water until we get into, you know, until we get into July and August and into the summer months, and then you kind of go from there.
Yeah, it kind of feels like an exercise in futility, I guess, at that point. But here we are. This is a team we've chosen to love, right? So we got to stick to it now, and we will. We'll still be out here watching, cheering, commiserating when it goes poorly. But we're ultimately here to talk about the Red Bulls match. LAFC tie 2-2 on a late Bawanga equalizer, an absolute banger from him. Happens after kind of a weird match. It is weird to watch the Red Bulls play this way. They pressed a little bit. You know, it's still kind of a more of a mid. I wouldn't say it's a, you know, it's not the same high press that it used to be. They were pressing into the LAFC half in the first half of the match, kind of setting a decently high line of confrontation about halfway between the circle and the 18, and really frustrating LAFC in possession. I thought there were several moments where it's like the fullbacks would be high and the center backs wouldn't know what to do with the ball. And it wasn't a whole lot of active pressure from Red Bulls. There's just kind of like five of their guys standing in our half, blocking off passing lanes. And then they kind of retreated in the second half into their own half. I'm saying the word half a lot at this point. The Red Bulls did. And it opened up a little bit more for LAFC to play in possession and to create a little more. And I do think that helped LAFC kind of get off the schneid there and keep pace. Aaron Long goes down with an injury. Trundolo says he's going to be okay. I think the assumption was that he broke his leg by everybody that saw the play happen and saw the amount of pain that he was in. Dolo says he's going to be just fine, I think is what the exact quote was. Eddie Segura comes in and concedes an own goal immediately. Josh, what do you make of this whole center back situation?
I mean, I guess the silver lining is Maxime Cheneau looks great, right?
Yeah.
And we'll definitely talk about that more, like, you know, mm-hmm. I think later on. But I think you're playing, as always, right? We're playing with some fire as it pertains to the roster construction and depth. Now, again, I think this is always a factor of, more so a factor of the league than anything else, right? It's it's like this same faux parody that we see, you know, we try to see in other sports as well, where you get, you know, we get these pretend, you know, again, it's manufactured, right? It's not really, it's a matter of an injury sinks you, whereas, you know, and whereas, like I said, in another league, obviously, if you're in outside of a window, it's different. But at least you're going to have the ability to have a you know, to build the proper depth behind that position, whether it be at the academy level or whatever, maybe because you're not restricted by the spending, right? And so, I think, like I said, it puts you in a tough spot because there's only so much you can do. I think you were lucky to find Cheneau there. But the question is, I just don't know what you're going to be able to do moving forward in the event that you actually do sustain a longer term injury to any of the center backs that are currently on the roster, right?
Yeah, it's definitely a bad spot. We've talked a lot about how little we like Aaron Long's game on the whole, right? How little we like his contract. But there's nobody else. What I will say is the Murillo and Long partnership has been bad this year. It's been bad in possession. It's been bad defensively. LAFC defensively have not been good. They've regressed since last year. Now, part of that is losing Chiqui Palacios, right? And not having a real suitable defensive replacement, right? Omar Campos came in, but he just wasn't ready. Ryan Hollingshead is good, but I don't think he's quite the same as Cheeky on that left side, right? Is it just the center backs? Is it the kind of new look midfield that's built more for possession, even though we don't really use it? I don't know. I'm not exactly sure. I do feel like there are a lot of balls, dangerous balls, that are played in just outside the 18, where the midfielders should be coming back and helping to add pressure, and that there are free runners in the box all the time. Just guys running unmarked all the time. We saw it in Portland twice last week. And it's that, to me, when I think about the goals that LAFC is conceding, it's kind of these balls in from just outside the 18 to a free runner. And that's got to change. Like, I don't know if they need to go more man marking at the back, or if they really need to focus in on the zones and just ball winning. I don't know. I don't know what they need to do, but it's got to be fixed.
Granted, it's always going to be difficult to recover when you lose one of the greatest defenders in the history of the game.
Sure.
Right? Like, it's going to be there's always going to be a drop off, and there's always going to be, you're always going, you know, what is it like when you're now exposed, you know, like, it's like that Chiellini's light, you know, basically hit, you know, kept a lot of those guys from being exposed for the, you know, their weaknesses being exposed because of how good he was. And obviously it's going to look a lot different when, you know, for an Erlang or for Maria, when they're next to each other versus next to Chiellini.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's why, you know, like I said, that's why I think moving forward, you kind of hope that Cheneaux continues to settle in, and then they basically play Cheneaux with someone else, because he looked, to me, I think, like I said, that is the one silver lining, and I think the potential is there that you have a guy now that can step in, is going to be progressive with the ball, from, you know, that does a lot of the things, obviously not at Chiellini's level, but does it at a high level, and then you can hopefully pair one of your two physical center backs with, to be able to hopefully come up with a good back line.
I think what impressed me most about Cheneaux last night was how comfortable he is at evading the press, right? Little Cruyff turns, just getting himself out of trouble, and as opposed to just clearing the ball down the field, right? Evading the press, finding, you know, creating a little bit of space so he can then play an actual pass. And I think that will pay a lot of dividends over the season if they can work him in permanently. The other thing that I'll say is, I think Murillo has always done much better when he's paired with a competent center back for long stretches, right? When you had Eddie Segura 1.0 before all the injuries, he was fine. When he was paired up with Chiellini, he was fine. But you put him with a guy like Aaron Long, and all of a sudden it's like there's a lot of pressure on him to do all the build out. There's a lot of pressure on him to be extra defensively sound, right? Whereas Aaron Long is a guy that's going to chase down runners. Yeah, and he's going to win crosses in the air. But he's not the tactical mastermind back there. He's just not, and that's okay. It's not his game. That's not what LAFC paid him to be. LAFC paid him to be more of a sweeper, right? But I don't think that suits Murillo to be partnered with somebody in that same mold, because that's essentially what Murillo is, right? So having two of them in that same mold is not the greatest idea, and it's not something that I think LAFC want to have to do. It's just, you know, you lose, who is it? What's the Italian kid's name that they lost to an ACL?
Della Valle.
Yeah. So bringing in Cheneaux, you know, and Eddie Segura has not looked good. Maybe the Cheneaux Murillo partnership is what they need to kind of stabilize things.
Well, but, and I think also, I think this is part of it too, right? The Murillo Long partnership, we saw it at points last year, right? But that's also with a very sound defensive midfield defensively.
Yeah.
Right? That having Acosta there alongside Ilier and Tillman and or Bogusz was going to do the job.
Yeah, yeah.
Defensively, that you needed to help protect those guys to a certain degree. Now, for as much as I love Atuesta, that pairing of him and Ilier ain't it as a, on the defensive end, right? They are no yeah. Latif and Mark Anthony.
Especially Tillman too. Like those three yeah. are brilliant again in possession on the ball. You should look to maximize that. But yeah, I agree. Defensively, it's just not the same.
No, I think with and I think that's probably where you're going to run into an issue there in the midfield is that like you basically need to play either Atuesta or Ilier with one of those two, right?
Yeah.
Or yeah. you have to play in a 4-2-3-1, you know, or a 4-5-1, you know, semantics. I know,
yeah,
but
yeah.
But with in a double pivot, basically, with Atuesta and Ilier together, is probably your just to make sure that they're not out of position, right? And then let Bogusz be your pressing midfielder at the 10, you know, or Tillman there. But I think you're gonna have to invert the triangle a little bit to ensure that you're a little bit more sound if you're gonna play those two together. And even I'm not entirely sure it's gonna be great because it's still not either one of their gem to do what needs to be done there.
Yeah. But I mean if you have two kind of like interception minded midfielders now screening the back line that's a little bit weaker than it has been in the past, I think that definitely helps lock it down.
Yeah.
Are they gonna switch? No, they will not. But
yeah, because I mean you would think so, because then obviously and if you're at least able to add Chanot to that mix, maybe it gives you a little bit more flexibility, because I think maybe that makes it better because you have a guy that's going to marshal the back line. But you can't do it's hard to do what we've been doing in addition to having a Campos at left back, right? That's and like two ultra attacking fullbacks, right? Like Campos and Hollingshead together. You know, I think it was a little bit better when Palencia, because Palencia is more defensive minded, right? The way that guy reacts to any kind of questionable call, though, is just brings
me
back
to away.
Yeah,
He's
I mean, it's like Cheeky
away.
Never left, but
yeah. So I don't know. I think the fullbacks definitely leave the back line a bit exposed. I mean, this is the way the LAFC play, though, right? Is if you watch closely when they're in possession, the three forwards are rather narrow and all the width is coming from the fullbacks who are wide and high up the pitch. Now, most of the time in a 4-3-3, you have both the fullbacks and the wingers in that same vertical on either wing, right? And this lets them combine between the two of them, right? It spreads out the back line a little bit more effectively, and it also keeps the fullbacks closer to the back line so you can build out a little bit easier. One thing that I found is that they really struggle to play the ball from the center backs to the fullbacks because the fullbacks are so high all the time, almost as if you're playing in a back three, right, with wing backs that are now pushed up to provide the width. Now, they did play out of a back three a lot yesterday with Ilier dropping in between, again, to get a numerical advantage against the 4-4-2 of the Red Bull. So like that's a little tactical thing that they did. And it's smart as well to do it that way. They just had trouble also getting enough midfielders back to play the ball through the lines as opposed to only going to the wing backs. And there are multiple times where as the ball would swing from center back to center back and then out to the fullback, the ball wouldn't arrive in time and it'd be intercepted. I noticed that happened much more yesterday against the Red Bulls than it has against any other team.
Now, is that a matter of continuity given, obviously, Atuesta's out, Aaron Long gets hurt in the first 10 minutes of the game, Chanot is new to the team, you know, you're doing a lot more shuffling than I think you've done previously. Obviously,
I think it's probably Red Bulls sitting on those, knowing that those passes are going to come a bit slower and sitting on those and looking for them, if anything. But yeah, I don't know. The funny thing is you have the midfielders to keep those wingers wide, right? But they are kind of playing direct. So I get it. Lump the ball forward and counter press centrally. but
which looked better. I mean, again, I when Bogus in the midfield actually playing his best position, it does look a lot more competent, right?
I guess obviously we can talk about
it is going to be different though because Kai Kamara doesn't have the legs to also press at the same time. So you saw in the first half, beyond the initial shock of losing Long in that moment, they've been trying to regroup, but it's just not. It's just not. You could tell they were a little bit hesitant because, again, that front line's likely to get beat. So the shape's got to be a bit different in your press. But in the second half, when Kamara comes off and Ordaz comes in, you really see, and you're running off obviously the high of the equalizing goal, and they're pushing for that second to try to get a win there. But I think the press does start to look a bit more intense and a little bit more coherent in the second half than it was the first.
Yeah. It is tough to watch Kai Kamara like this. He just looks like a guy who's probably all the way over the hill. And at this point, you just hope that he gets those goals, right?
For sure. I mean, again, and he's put into a spot that I don't think he anticipated, right? I mean, I don't think anyone anticipated Kai Kamara to be a guy that needed to play 60 minutes, right?
Right.
I think at best he was supposed to be there to spell, to play 30 minutes a game or to have to spell Giroud when Giroud gets tired or whatever it may be. But, not a guy that's, he's going to play 30 minutes when you're playing on the road in, middle of nowhere, whatever it may be. But I think it's just different because, again, it always comes back to the limitations that they, and the training wheels that they continue to put on these teams. And again, I think there was an article that had come out in The Athletic where they talked about, there was a resounding push to continue to get people, the MLS to continue to open up and to do more with what they have and the potential. But MLS is going to MLS.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, LAFC go down. They battle back, right? They get the penalty. 100% a penalty, like, no doubt in my mind. Bawanga does what he does. I love having a penalty taker that does not mess around, right? How long did you and I complain about Vela? Like, dude, just blast that ball. Quit trying to be so clever. I think the stat that the commentators, I think it was Max that said it, he hasn't missed a penalty yet in MLS.
No. I mean, when you put that much venom behind it, good luck.
Yeah.
My
favorite thing about when he takes penalties, Josh, is you see the goal move, right? Because that back post that's on the ground isn't bolted down to the ground, and you see it move. It lifts up when his penalties hit the back of the net.
I mean, it was the same for me as a Liverpool fan with Mo Salah. Salah is the guy who just puts his boot through it hard as he can.
Yeah.
But prior to that, you used to get guys, Coutinho would get cute with it. Milner would kind of get cute with it. You see it all over the place, obviously. And then obviously Vela for LAFC would get cute with it. Bernardo Silva, right, is probably the biggest, the biggest one in the most recent thing that got way too cute with it and cost his team a Champions League place. But hey,
Yeah, I mean, so Kepa was on the bench talking to who's the
Lunin,
Madrid keeper?
Yeah, Lunin from Ukraine.
Yeah, and he they caught him mouthing it to him, like, hey, he's going to go central.
And not even just central with no pace.
Yeah, yeah, betting on him diving, right? That's the bet. But yeah, anyway. Yeah, man, Bawanga's penalties, where you used to feel a certain amount of anxiety when Carlos would step up to the ball because you don't know if it's actually going in or not. With Bawanga, there's no doubt. Like, if they call a penalty for LAFC, it's a goal. It's a goal. So, and then, again, his equalizer comes off of a kind of a busted corner, right? Creates it himself, takes it from, kind of the top of the box, boom. Place goes crazy, and again, it's just something you hope that they can build on, because it is a positive result. Like, this is a good result for them, similar to the Galaxy result, right? Where it doesn't come easy, It's a bit ugly at times, right? You have to play against the Galaxy again. You're playing out of a Christmas tree formation, but like you won the tactical battle there and you do enough to get a good result against a good Red Bulls team. Again, a positive thing for LAFC, and hopefully it's something that they can continue to build on and we get more of this over the next few months.
You hope that Bwanga continues to understand the importance of space and what he can do with it. Because earlier in the game, I don't know how many times I watched him just give up balls on one-on-ones, right? Yeah. Like, you know, like, was it Tolkien that was on his side?
I think Tolkien was on the opposite side.
Or whoever was the defender on his side had him in his pocket for a good part of that match. Yeah. Really, and not doing too much, just basically standing his ground and letting Bwanga dribble into him. Right.
It's Nealis on that side. Yeah. One of the Nealis brothers. Yeah.
You know, so, you know, maybe, you know, that Nealis knew that the other Nealis was going to cover for him. So you're, you know, you have more faith in the guy behind you so you can be a little bit more stout defensively. But, yeah. And in the 4-4, granted, right. Also in the 4-4-2, you're going to have, you know, that other right midfielder tracking back to kind of put pressure on him from behind as well. So, you know, obviously Bwanga has to understand that pressure a little bit better, but, you know, again, if he can continue to find the space and work with that space as opposed to having to try and just physically outmatch everyone he goes up against, because that's obviously what his advantage had been, right? Like, and we've seen it for the last year and a half where he's just physically better than the majority of guys he goes up against. But that type of play will only last so long, right? At a certain point, if you want to be able to extend your run past a certain point as a top player, you're going to have to find another trick because, you know, like I said, the book will be out on you and then you got to be able to come up with something new. And so thus far, I feel like the league has done a significantly better job of understanding what Bwanga wants to do and keeping him from doing that regularly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the book is out, right? You double him and he's still going to try and dribble at you. So as long as you don't dive in and get beat, you're fine. As long as you're not caught out of position and he's streaking behind you, you're fine. Now, that's easier said than done because Bwanga is still a brilliant player, clearly. But yeah, I think you can do more as a team to prevent that as well by like playing more balanced and being able to actually attack proficiently down the right wing or through the middle, right? Being able to use your midfield to dictate the game and be, again, to borrow the buzzword from a couple of years ago, be an actual protagonist in the game where you aren't just given possession by the other team who kind of sits back in a 4-4-2, but you take possession of the game and you're the one going at the other team. Kike, we're going to have to see something from him at some point. I know he's got one goal in the season, but we still want to see more.
I want to see him at right midfield or at right back.
Yeah.
No, because...
You got muted there.
Oh, not sorry. Sure what happened. I do think that his, in all honesty, like his best position is probably somewhere in a more defensive role because, again, the offensive chops just aren't there, you know. Like, again, he beats guys around the corner. He looks fast. He does all those different things. But to count on him as a you're not going to get he doesn't have enough credibility as a finisher to be able to take any kind of pressure off of your other guys. Yeah. And so now that back line just has a much easier time defending you because now they know that they don't have to help. They can isolate him one-on-one. They can shift the guy over to help on Bwanga. And you're good to go, right?
Other notable things from the game, Mueller comes in and kind of, I think, took a lot of people by surprise. Like, oh, this kid can, he's got some juice, right? I know he scored quite a few goals for LAFC too. He nearly gets one in this match. Will be interesting to watch him be included more over the future. But, you know, you saw some things tonight. We're like, okay, maybe there's something there that we can use, right?
Maybe. Part of me feels like this is just a JT mind trick to make me think these aren't the droids I'm looking for, and this is definitely not the Mueller I was looking for when we when this Bayern partnership came.
He's not the Raumdeuter.
Yeah. In all, I mean, to be fair, he in all fairness, he did look competent. He looked fine. He found good spaces. He looked big, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so he's definitely. Not, you know, like, so if we're gonna continue down this road of having a target strikers in place to be ready for Giroud, I'm not going to mind if it's a rotation of him and Kamara, and which if that brings Bogusz back to the midfield with more consistency and we can be more sound there. Because I think given our defensive struggles, having Bogusz in the midfield does more for me than leaving him up top and then leaving him up top because, you know, again, and leaving him up top because I think you're going to get enough potentially from the duo of Mueller and Kamara until July, right? You basically have to survive 2 months. So,
yep. Man, I hope Kamara can put it together and I hope he gets the record.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I think he'll get it if he doesn't have to play 90 minutes or even 60 minutes. 30 minutes a game, he's going to score 8 goals, right? Like, he'll find a way. But you could tell, and especially against a Red Bull team, like, what a game, what a team to have to come in and play extended minutes in, because everyone looked, you know, if Bwanga looked exhausted, I can't even imagine what Kamara was going through.
Yeah. It's also funny, too, if you look at the average position map, his position is dead center of the field, like in the central circle. And Bogusz actually is positioned higher than him on average, which is kind of hilarious to me that Kamara kind of got buried in the midfield trying to get touches on the ball.
Yeah, I mean, he was having to come back a lot deeper. And also, Bogusz was a lot higher on the press, right? I think they realized Kamara was going to have the legs there. So you let Kamara kind of drop deeper and just kind of sit. And then Bogusz is the one that kind of will move, you know, try and force the issue up top a little bit more, is what I kind of saw there. You know, but then I could also see Kamara starting to get frustrated because, you know, he'd be in position and just not get any kind of service. And again, Bwanga's not going to give you a cross. And I don't know what Oliveira is doing on the other side. So, I hope he knew what he was getting signed up for as it pertained to the service.
Yep. A couple things that I want to, there's a couple narratives forming and some I think need to be pointed out and others need to be dispelled. One that I think is worthy of pointing out is LAFC are, I think, second in the league in terms of XG created. Now, you and I have talked a lot about XG and why you can't just rely on that as the metric to know if your team is good. Right. But I think it is notable that despite kind of like bad to average form in their case, they're still creating a lot of good chances. Right now, they're not capitalizing on them. And at the risk of sounding like 2021, I think it probably evens out. You bring in Giroud and a lot of those chances are probably getting converted at a higher rate. But I think that's interesting because it kind of feels like the attack must be bad this year. I think the attack is actually better. They're just not finishing. And defensively, they've been rather poor throughout the season. And again, we've already kind of talked about that. The other thing that I want to get at, Josh, is I see Timothy Tillman getting some hate online. And I have no idea how that's possible, but that's got to stop.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's always going, Tillman's always one of these guys that like in moments he'll do something. They just like, okay. Right. Like you kind of lose your mind for a second, but then at the same time, he does provide more positive moments than not, but it's rich coming from, I don't know, it's not the fan base as a whole, but I distinctly remember people being far more defensive over two guys who provided even less than Tillman has ever done.
Yeah.
right? Yeah. Let's put it that way. So, you know, again, does he do boneheaded things every now and then? Sure, right? If he didn't, he'd still be in Europe. He'd still be doing his thing there. He'd still
yeah.
be...
Yeah, it's back to that whole, like, these are MLS players.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, do I think he has... Does he have a higher ceiling and a higher floor than our 2021 midfield? Absolutely. And I think that's probably the stark difference. Let's put it this way. For as bad as we think we may be at the moment, right? And again, and I don't even think we're that bad. I think we're probably about mid-table. It's just nothing great. Nothing. We're not terrible. We're not great. Let's put it that way.
Nothing to write home about either way.
Yes. 2021 had Raheem Edwards play regularly. So we'll leave it at that as to why it's hard. Oh, like I'll stop short of comparing any, you know, anything to that particular season, with the exception of I still miss Chicho. Right. But beyond that, you know, I think we're still, I think the floor is still higher. And I think Tillman is a big part of that. Right. The floor is definitely higher. The ceiling is definitely higher.
Yeah.
Whether we ever hit that ceiling is a whole nother story, because I don't think the rest of the pieces aren't in place to allow you to do that at the moment, right? The ceiling being we're going to bring home trophies. I think this is a playoff team that will always be dangerous. The question just becomes how dangerous, and can you do it at the right time given the circumstances?
Yeah. Yeah. So there you have it, everybody. A couple narratives that we got to get, that we got to get past. So yeah, LAFC are a bit Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, with, you know, these 1 minute they're beating Galaxy for their only loss of the season, and the next they are unable to do anything against a 10-man Portland, and they're losing to the Colorado Rapids, but then they have a good result against the Red Bulls. So it's just up and down right now. I think Josh said it best, like, it's mid-table stuff. They're never going to be too high. You're going to have some weird low moments, and then they're going to kind of even out and just be fine. And we'll see what happens over the summer. Anything else you want to get to from this match?
No, I think we can get to questions, because I need to refrain from going on in a tirade regarding, again, just the hamstringing that the league can do. I mean, again, we've been on this soapbox for a while, so we can save it for another week and keep this one on a positive.
Josh is talking about Chicho died for nothing, which I think we need to make some new shirts. And I think that needs to be it. I think it's Chicho died for nothing shirts this year, Josh.
Yeah. It's the son Chicho. What was the goalie that was here for a while? Pablo Sniega.
Oh, Cisniega, yeah.
San Pablo Cisniega. The new one is San Chicho.
Man, the goalkeeping situation at LAFC is just hilarious
consider. Yeah, again, Max was a great refrain, right? Like,
yeah.
I think that signing alone did more for my sanity as an LAFC fan than any other.
Yeah.
Which is why it's hard to see him go. Lloris, I like. He's, you know, he hasn't been. It's like one of those things where, as much as I wanted Max to stay, given the financial circumstances, again, this is where we can go back and go on another tirade on the league.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard not to pass up on Hugo Lloris to give you what he's giving you for the price.
Yeah.
Right. Which is about the same as what you got for Max.
The only question I will ask you is, I think Max and Aaron Long were about on the same amount of money. So
that's what I mean. You, so
could for you have 500, kept Max
for 500K, and, I'll take Lloris. But again, if you're going to need another center back for 500K, same thing.
That's what I'm saying. Right. Maxime Cheneau wasn't available, but like, can you get somebody at that level for 500 grand? Maybe. All right. First one tonight is from Jeff Talk. Who's the second DP we're going to get after Giroud? I'll let you have a hack at this one.
It is, I mean, I think the one that everyone assumes and wants is probably one Antoine Griezmann, right? The likelihood is it's going to be no one until next summer.
That's the truth, Josh. I mean, you'll have Bawanga, you'll have Giroud, right? And I mean, it could be Carlos at this point, the guy. I don't know.
Well, here's,
I mean,
something maybe about a market inefficiency or something along that line. But like, the only time we've had in the last however many years, we had Andre Orta, right? Mm-hmm. You had Brian Rodriguez. You have Bwanga for half a season as a third DP.
Yeah.
Right? Half a season. Then it kind of shook out a little bit better because someone, you know, Rossi left and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Then you had Christian Teo.
Was he a DP?
Yeah. Signed as a DP, third DP.
Okay.
Through the end of the year, right? So you're not paying him for that, right?
Yeah, yeah. He was going to be or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So the track record isn't great.
Yeah.
Right? So I do wonder if it's like one of these things where they're like, is it worth the budget hit? Or do you sign two guys for 300K? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I think they clearly prefer DPs that are forwards, and I don't necessarily disagree. Like in MLS, that's where you got to put all the money. But at the same time, for a long stretch, we had three DP wingers, right? And we had Chicho or whoever, you know, was playing striker. So it was like, it wasn't a good fit. And for whatever reason, they just kept signing more and more wingers as DPs. Now, if Giroud comes in, now we're definitely not going to run into that problem. And now Kike is the one who is not a DP, but, you know, so, I mean, you could go out and sign a right winger, and then you could have three proper DPs all playing their position. I don't see it. I don't see it happening. And the midfield is full. I mean, you know what? You know who it could honestly be? It could honestly be Edward Atuesta as a DP in the midfield.
Yeah, and you sign him as on a DP through the back half of the...
I mean, I think you probably sign him to an 18-month contract, right? And he's a DP. Do I think he warrants that contract? No. But I think this is probably Ilya's last year, at least with you, right? So if you can lock down Atuesta for a couple of years because you give him DP money and you let him play his natural position and you have Bogush and Tillman and another midfielder somewhere, then I think you're good. But it could be him. I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, I don't know if I would necessarily be mad about it if they spent wisely in other places. And I think part of it too is I think I still have concerns and or questions about what the totality of the roster rules will look like come summer.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, essentially
the Mickey Mouse League makes it a lot harder to predict what will happen.
We know that you're getting three DPs, right? Three senior DPs, and you're getting three U22s, regardless of what DPs you sign, right? And so you've got room to sign Atuesta and Giroud and Bawanga. We already know that they like Kike, who's a U22, right? So there's your other winger, even though nobody else really wants him to be a starting winger. Who the other U22s are, I think Campos might be. Right? He must be. That was a big transfer fee they paid for him, didn't they?
On LAFC's website, it does not list him as a U22 player. Just Oliveira at this point. Now, the roster still lists, I mean, I guess they're on loan, right? So they're technically still on there in Buke and some of these guys. So
yeah. I mean, I guess the real question would be, do they do the stupid icon player thing and you sign Carlos again?
Yeah,
that would be the only one. But yeah,
well, and I think part of it too is in that same conversation is like, we don't know what the total cap looks like, right? Because you still technically have to fit all of it under the total salary cap, right? Because there's still all DPs are a 600K hit, right? So if you use all three, that's 1.8. I need Ben Cox to come on here and give us another refresher on what this total money, so the total money situation would look like. But if it's 1.8, if you use all three U22s and DPs, it's, I think it's 1.8 plus the U22 is 300K or 150? 200?
I think it's 200. Might be 150. So you're 2.4, between 2.2 and 2.4. Yeah.
So so you're looking at half your cap for six players.
Yeah.
And then you got to juggle it, and who knows what we're paying to some of the TAM guys that are currently already on the roster.
Right? I mean, we already know that we're like 700,000 over for Aaron Long.
Yeah. Ilya is another guy that's on more money, right? I think he makes like 1.
Yeah, but Ilya contributes to this team in a really meaningful way. Hey,
I will not speak ill of Aaron Long today because that man sacrificed his body and potentially his leg to stop a goal that Eddie Segura subsequently gave up. But
yeah,
in fairness to him, I'll wait a week to criticize him.
Yeah. All right. Corey at We Don't Post Ever got some good data on some of the new guys after tonight. What's the counter press starting 11 versus Portland? Josh, just assume everybody that's like day to day or like not De La Valle, like that with an ACL, that they're healthy for next week against Portland. And what's your starting 11?
So if we're not going to change anything about what we do, right, you kind of have to kind of stick with what we've been doing beforehand. Yep. I don't know if you can change, you can swap out. You definitely can't play a midfield of Atuesta, Ilya, and Tillman with Kai Kamara up top without changing your tactics. It's too much of a liability defensively if you don't adjust something tactically wise, right? Because they don't they're just not going to have the legs to do it, right? Now, if you're going to tell me where we're going to play in a 4-4-2 and actually 4-4-2 with Kai Kamara and Bwanga up top and Oliveira at that right midfield is the solution to everything for now. And potentially
Bogush as the left midfielder there.
Yeah, or even probably. I mean, he plays on the left wing, you know, like he had played on the left wing at times last year, right? With Vela and Bwanga. When he was starting a couple of times, he was on that left.
So are you sitting Tillman then?
In the 4-4-2, I mean, if you have to play Oliveira, then yes.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wanted just to see what Oliveira would look like in a right midfielder role. I feel like he'd be excellent.
I mean, that's the reason you're saying 4-4-2 is incredibly self-serving here.
Yeah. But
you want to see him there so bad. I mean, I he's probably better in that spot. Sure.
He's from Uruguay. Like put name whatever Uruguayan mid winger that has played for LAFC and put him in a withdraw them about 8 yards to a left midfield spot and they're infinitely more effective.
Yeah. Back line.
Chanel and whoever's healthy is my Chanel, yeah. Whoever's healthy, Palencia and Hollingshead, because I think if you're going to not change that midfield and you're gonna go Atuesta and you're going with the Atuesta, Ilya and Tillman midfield, I want that defensive stability back there at the back. As opposed to playing Campos, who's more progressive. I think, like I said, down the road you can play, unless you're going to go into the Chanel, Ilya drops in primarily on into a back three, and then you let the wing backs fly. Maybe it works, but I don't know if Atuesta is great as a shuttler.
Yeah. I'm going with the 4-3-3 because that's what LAFC does. Going all the way back to the beginning. except for when Bob found a new toy in Raheem Edwards and decided that he was going to go three-man back line.
Keep in mind, the beginning was 4-2-3-1. The very, very beginning was a 4-2-3-1. Yeah,
okay.
And then, because remember, our boy Lee Wynn fit right into that number 10
role.
Killed it for a summer.
Yeah. So 4-3-3, and it's Bowanga, Bogush, and I'm starting David Martinez if he's healthy. I'm not joking about that. I do not think Kike Oliveira has anything to offer. I'm sorry. I just don't. In the same way that I want Chicho on this team, despite whatever defensive lapses he had, I don't want my right winger on a team that's struggling to convert chances to be Kike Oliveira so he can defend. I don't, especially against Portland, I don't need that. I don't want that. I want somebody who's going to break a defense down and who's going to put goals in the back of the net. I can't watch it anymore.
Let me ask you this unserious hypothetical. Would you trade Olivier Giroux and Kike Oliveira for Chicho, Opoku, and then obviously David Martinez stays as your guy that slots into the right, that right wing.
So go from Giroud and Kike to Chicho and Opoku.
And yeah, and then you choose between Opoku and Martinez on that right wing.
The change up from Opoku to David Martinez is really interesting to me because Opoku essentially is Kike, right?
Yeah.
He scored cheaper. A lot more goals than Kike. I'll give him that. But, you know, still kind of a press merchant. And I mean,
he's Kike on a supplemental contract.
Yeah, right, right. Man, Opoku was so fun. He was such a fun player. I still don't think I do. Just because I still have David Martinez, I'm assuming, with Kike, right? And Giroud.
Yes.
So Giroud is the one that makes it, right? As much as I do love Chicho and think that LAFC fumbled it, and again, I realize there's a lot of nuance to how it happened, right? I get it. But if you're going to tell me that Chicho died for business reasons only, then Carlos should have been on, should have been right there next to him.
Mm-hmm.
For business reasons.
Well, especially if, like I said, if especially knowing the result in hindsight, right, where trophy you got zero trophies.
Yeah.
Then it's even more glaring.
And believe me, I have the same level of sentimentality about Carlos Vela that everybody else does. But Chicho is the one that carried you
through Raheem Edwards.
Through those dark times and through the times when you thought you were going to lose out on the supporter shield, and he was able to keep pace just enough while Carlos was out, right? Carried you through the playoffs. Now he doesn't get a goal in the MLS Cup final.
Yeah, but he beats the Galaxy when it mattered the most.
He's the one. He is the one, right? And so, again, I want him back, but I think Giroud is just, he's a different level of player altogether. Like, we're talking about a striker who is actually world class. Now, hopefully he still has that. Hopefully he's still motivated. Hopefully LAFC know how to use him. Because as of right now, I can't guarantee you that they do. But yeah, so for me, it would be Giroud and Kike. And I'm assuming that they're going to figure out that Kike is no good and start playing David Martinez here pretty soon. So yeah, that's it. The midfield for me. So that my starting three again, Bowanga, Bogush, and David Martinez. And then the midfield is Atuesta, Tillman, and Ilie. And across the back, it's Hollingshead, Chanot, Murillo, and Palencia. I don't need to see Aaron Long anymore. But anyway.
How long do you and then, for example, like now, let's fast forward into August. How does that look? Say David Martinez continues to kill it on that right wing and he's undroppable alongside Giroud and Boanga. How now do you set up the team behind? And where do you use your DP spot? Again, complete hypothetical. But Martinez has enough juice that I think that he could make it really interesting. Right. Where
I think if Martinez comes in and takes that spot, right? And you have Giroud starting the vast majority of games. I think you can do a pretty good rotation with those four midfielders. Where I think you mostly want Tillman and Bogusz playing as your attacking mids, right? And you're starting to move Ilya off to the bench a little bit more as we clearly see, right? He's a 60. If there's a 60 minute sub, it's him. It's that weird striker sub, and Bogusz goes into the midfield, right? So you just start playing out to Westa. I think that's really it, is you just rotate them as necessary to save legs and to make sure that they're healthy.
And then does that mean that we're getting Sergiño Dest on a DP contract and right back for half a season?
He's hurt.
Yeah, I know.
He just did his knee. But all right, next one, Jesse. Long injury cutting into an already thin roster, no pun intended. Chanot doing a yeoman's job out there organizing and distributing. The ref ignored many late challenges by Red Bulls. Kike disappeared. Kamara was also ineffective. Then he was our saving grace, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, I think any game against Red Bull, you have to expect the level of physicality, and it's just a matter of whether or not how the ref is going. I mean, I'm not going to fault him either way. I think if we're the aggressors, we expect them to swallow the whistle, and I'm not going to complain so much if it the opposite happens, right? And when it really mattered the most, he made the right call on the penalty. So I'm only going to be so mad about it. I think that obviously the team, they have to tread carefully, and I think that, again, it speaks to both a roster build and league issue as it pertains to the thinness of the roster. But I think that that's something that's been talked at nauseam, and I think not just by us, but across the board.
Yeah.
Any team that's in CCL, right, or whatever the heck it is now, you know, we'll tell you the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, long going down, definitely. You thought you kind of stabilized your center back position, and now it's right back into turmoil, especially with Eddie Segura not looking great, right? I think that long term, the two starters are Chanot and Murillo, hopefully. Tom Camilleri thought Chanot acquitted himself well, unafraid to be on the ball and directing the defense. I feel like Kike Island needs to be a thing now since he shuts down an entire side of LAFC's offense. I'm all about a good NFL crossover here.
Yeah, I mean, what else can be said on that one? I'm going to leave it at that. Listeners are the smartest listeners. Let's.
Yeah, absolutely. Tom, are you a Jets fan? No, he's a Bronco fan. Referring obviously to Revis Island, right? Darrell Revis. It's just a dead end over there. It's just a dead end. And interestingly enough, again, if you look at where most of their attacks flow through, it is down the right side, right? They're building down that side to get it to Boanga open if they're not playing super direct to Boanga in the first place. But, man, it's just, they just do not create enough at that right wing spot. No more Uruguayan wingers. I'm sorry. I'm done with it. We got Diego Rossi, and he was brilliant for a long time. And then we sold him, and now he's back in MLS, similar to Chicho. Right? You finally move him on, you get something for him, and then comes right back and does it for another team. Okay, Gomez Jr., we saw three of four of our strikers, quote-unquote, today. Agree we would like to see a bit more of Mueller. Segura just not in, just not at the season. Lloris is a World Cup champ, but am I crazy to say we might just need a bit more in terms of reactions from him? Last few games, he's been a bit slow and watches them go in.
Your backline doesn't do him any favors, and I think any goalkeeper that's, you know, is going to struggle when you're having to do as much as he's had to as of late. So I think you can do him some favors and just be, you know, like I said, at 500K, we need to be more confident in front of him, right? We've put better back lines in front of San Pablo Cisniega and Tyler Miller. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, and so I think if you give him a little bit more, I think you're okay there. Yeah, and then to the earlier point, that was, what did he, what was the first point?
The first point was three out of four of our strikers.
Oh, Mueller. We mentioned it earlier. I do think that if you're going to give me some combination of Mueller and Kamara together and allow the midfield to get better, I think you may be better off for it until Giroud gets here. Mm. Right. So, you know, again, depends on when you would want to experiment with it, and maybe there's a time and a place to do it as opposed to running it all the time. But I think there's something there where you can play a combination of the two of them together to save legs while simultaneously increasing your depth and improving your defensive protection with a stronger midfield.
What I will say about Lloris, I just looked up his post-shot XG. It's not good, actually. He's 24th percentile. I guess that's over the last 365 days. This is coming from FP Ref. So I don't know if there were problems at Tottenham as well with this that are kind of confounding that data. But that's showing that it's not great. He's not making some of the saves that he definitely should. Again, take it for what it's worth. It's statistics. They don't always tell a clear picture in football. But okay, Darmalia, it feels like a win. LOL, we are a mid-table team playing a top team in the East. It shouldn't feel like a win until we can get a full roster together. Yeah, this is in reference to me saying it to draw. It feels like a win as opposed to the one in Portland last week. And I do agree to a certain extent, right? I'm tired of draws. I want to start seeing some actual wins. But
sure, you know. But again, we're told by the league that it doesn't matter until July. So be it.
Yeah. Why do we follow this league, Josh? Alan Kine. Big thank you to Denis for masking another poor performance. I want to agree with the win feeling, but this is yet another letdown and at home. So many concerns and so few answers provided. 1.33 points per game is not good enough.
I mean, they're going to have to turn it up at some point, right? We know that. I think the problem with waiting till July, as they have often done, is that first game in July is always, obviously now, now we'll be moving forward, right, for a while, is that Galaxy Rose Bowl game, right, because of the wonky scheduling that MLS is. Again, we're going to shy away from said criticism today. But so I think it's always going to be a rough, you know, it's always going to be a rough transition to have to wait that long. So I think I'm hoping that they'll do enough to not just keep their head above water, but also put themselves into position as you head into June, right? I think they need to probably do something and hope they figure, they have to figure out enough to put them in better position heading into June. So that way, when you hit July, if there is a initial rough patch and or transition period when you bring in your guns, that it doesn't drop you too far off.
Yeah. All I can think is to say is ojalá que sí, right? Like that's I just hope it's enough, man. I hope it's enough in terms of firepower. I hope it's enough time to get it all to gel. And I hope you've got, I hope you've built yourself enough of a cushion to be highly seeded enough in the playoffs to be successful, right? And ultimately, if the season ends with an MLS Cup, then great. We've all been worrying about nothing. But, man, I don't know. Maybe they make a surprise run in like the Open Cup or something, Josh, and kind of take advantage of everybody else fielding weak rosters there. I don't know.
I mean, as long as there's a Champions League spot at stake, it's always going to be worth the effort to us. You know, to a certain degree, and yeah, especially if you're not in the chain, you know, like it's one thing if you're in it that year, right? Yeah. It's a whole nother thing to not be in any other competition. So it's a good, you know, like I said, I've always understood that you needed to hedge your bet in that same sense.
Are there Champions League spots for the Voldemort Cup?
Mm-hmm. I didn't think so, because I think the tough thing with that one, right, is like, you would limit it to either
Liga MX and
Mexican MLS. Or MLS team, and it's a federation thing, right? So I believe those, you know, it still has to come from CCC now, right? Champions Cup. Let me see. I'm going to double check this qualification, but...
Because that would be one reason to care about it, and that's the official counter press term for it, is the Voldemort Cup. Everybody is more than welcome to use it. We hope that you do, because that's what it should be called.
No, a League's Cup winner does get,
bro, it's not called that. Use the right name, Josh.
The Voldemort Cup, right? So you get, there's the 6 Liga MX clubs, 5 MLS clubs via the regular qualification, right?
Yeah. So, okay.
And then 2 Canadian Premier League clubs, 1 US Cup Open winner, 1 Canadian Championship winner, 3 Voldemort Cup clubs, 6 Central American Cup, and 3 Caribbean Cup. So you basically just shut out, you know, try to limit the Central American teams because they don't.
So there are Triple C spots. Oh my gosh, this is driving me crazy. There are Champions Cup spots in the Voldemort Cup up for grabs. Mm-hmm. The top 3 finishers.
Yep. 2 plus the first, the third place team.
Okay. All right. It kind of makes me hate it more.
Yeah, I mean, again, the downside of it is like the fun, some of the best fun of the champions, you know, of CONCACAF, right, has been, you get CONCACAF, you go down to Saprissa, you go down to Alajuelense, some of these random teams, and you get, you know, an MLS team or a Liga MX team that's supposed to, you know, outclass them gets beat when they shouldn't, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, all that's on top of the fact that they are using those spots to legitimize the competition, right? Where mm-hmm. we're going to shut down all of MLS during the regular season to run this thing. But anyway, all right, enough of that. Anything else for tonight, Josh?
No, let's see. Who's our next? Is we're Portland again for the
Portland.
Next
one? Portland at home.
So, yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. Obviously, you hope you go into this one. Obviously, when you expect that Portland's going to be even more defensive than before, but you just hope that you don't give up acres of space for Evander to run through.
Yeah, because Portland have not been good this year. I mean, we're talking about like the 9th or 10th place. I think that's actually 11th or 12th place team in the West. So,
and these are they're 11th.
They're
right?
Beatable.
Mm-hmm. So this is a team that you should and need to beat at this point. Like, these are the teams, yes, you have to beat at this point in the season. Yes. So you have Portland at home, you have San Jose away, which is always a tough one, but even then, I don't want to hear excuses when you don't, right?
Yeah, San Jose's been abysmal.
Yeah.
This year.
Vancouver, and then St. Louis, right, who hasn't been good this year compared to last year. So, you know, these are the teams, you said, for them to do what they need to do, they have to beat teams, they have to beat every, they have to not just draw, they need to
beat
the teams that are below them in the table, right?
I guess that's the message, is we are still willing to believe, but you got to convince us a little bit here, LAFC. Yeah. Just convince us.
And that probably still puts you in the top three if you do, if you beat those teams, you know, and then, like I said, you get into the summertime and, you know, you're in a much better position, but it's going to take at least doing that is the bare minimum and the floor that you have to be able to accomplish.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. You can follow the show at @counterpress_. You can follow me at Kirk Kinsey. Josh.
LAFC Josh on X.
We will talk to you all next time. Good night.